I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, there, Beverly Hills 90210 fans.
You know how when they yell cut, they wouldn't stop.
That's interesting.
What?
Yes.
If you were Donna, what would you have said?
I said...
A waitress, rather, call the police. And she was mistaken in 90210 for cops.
Along with your host, Charles Rosen.
But look at that Dean cake. And Dan probably got the best performance he ever gave.
We're having a meeting here?
Oh, at least there's one person on this piccata set that knows what they're doing.
Larry Mullen.
I had a friend named Craig Richland. There was still cocaine around and stuff. I always remembered him. I just kind of thought I would honor my coke dealer.
Get out of here!
Pete Ferrero.
Here's what I learned. It's possible Claire would have gone out with me.
That was your takeaway.
So sit back and relax because it's like totally time for the Beverly Hills 90210 show.
Just hold on to me tonight.
Okay, here we are back again. It's been a minute since we've been here on the Beverly Hills 90210 show. Chuck, we should start with you. The Dodgers won the World Series. Chuck and I couldn't.
Performance by Yoko Amoto. My God.
We couldn't do a podcast, Chuck, because we act like we're management and we watch every postseason game as if we are involved in it somehow. So that's why the postseason was going on. Baseball's going on. We can't do a podcast. We have too much going on with the Dodgers.
He's going to the games.
Yeah. I did. I was in fact exchanging email things with Kristen McIsaac about it. I was at the, because we have a lot of Toronto fans in the 90210 fan community. Of course we do. The Canadians. Yeah. God bless them. And a really, and a fun baseball team. But I think I can sum it up this way. We were in New York and we saw the game in a hotel. And then two nights later, we go to a dinner that was honoring my son. So that was really the highlight of the month. It was fabulous. 1,000 people there. And he was one of 25 being honored from Birthright Israel. And but there were a lot of people from Toronto because the organization started in Toronto. And so I went, oh, you're from Toronto? Well, we're in Los Angeles. And then we would talk baseball. And we would express pity for them. And I always said this. I said, "But yes, my wife is very sorry for you. I'm much less sorry than she is." So that's how I
They used to be edged out.
But, yeah. Chuck, you were at that big 18-inning game.
Yeah, the one, and we left in the end of the 16th, not because I was so tired, but I couldn't bear for them to lose. And the World Series game, and then they were drained for the next 2 days, and the only chance they really had was to go on the road and take it in Toronto, and they stepped up and they did it with some of the most amazing plays, repeated plays, a dozen, not just two or three, four highlights, a dozen highlights, and amazing things you don't see, and big homers. And I felt very vindicated because my Dodger all year, and it was like, why isn't he starting at shortstop? Why was Mookie Betts playing? Although Betts developed to be a great shortstop defensively. But Miguel Rojas was my guy. And when the Dodgers stunk in July and August, he was the only one out playing every day and hitting. So that he gets that big home run, That was real exciting for me.
Shocking. Larry, you're in Ohio.
The Ohio River.
No friends in Ohio, you said.
No,
we were talking earlier.
Yeah.
Will you be coming back here in January?
Yes, I am. I'm booked to arrive January 3rd and in good time for Chuck's birthday party, whatever's going on for Chuck. And I'll be in LA through January, and then I'm going to La Quinta, California for most of February.
Okay, good. So how are things in Ohio? Everything's okay?
Yeah, I've really been here now 3.5 months. So I've really kind of settled into a routine. I love the fitness center I go to, the people there. So I'm happy there. It's easier. I've got a great office to write in. And I've got, you know, the kid, August John, my little nephew. We've got some dedicated, caring for him time with my wife a couple of days a week. And it's just great watching them learn stuff. And when my kids were young, I was working all the time. I didn't pick them up until they could throw a ball and really hit. Then I was big time dad. But before then, I didn't give a shit. I never went to Disneyland with them in my life.
Is the name August a reference to Taylor Swift's song?
Sure. Sure.
Okay. Why not? Right?
I will ask that question of my my daughter-in-law.
August, I bet you it is. Yeah, I bet you that's
double G, Augie. And he's a boy who's growing up with a very big dog who's his protector.
And we have Brian Navarro here. How's everything in Reddit? Any crazy shit going down? Usually there's something.
Not anything too bad, just the usual. We did have a fun thing with the Funko Pops. I sent you one, Pete, of one of my moderators, Raph, made like this whole line of 90210 Funko Pops after the
I think they're good and edgy. I like them.
Yeah. And Christina Lisa actually shared some on her page. So that was fun.
What was I going to say? Well, the point of this episode, one of the reasons we're here, is because we also missed the 30th anniversary show, the 35th anniversary show. We did this great thing for the 30th, and we skipped the 35th. So
the 30th anniversary show we did started the whole revitalization of the zip
all
code.
Of it. All
the,
of it.
The legacy, the business of the zip code for everybody. You know, they realized there was a fandom out there, which was glorious for us.
But I
stepped in the vacuum because as some of you know and support, which I really appreciated, I've been writing a newsletter for all of 2025 and putting one out every month. And there we were in October. So I got the idea, and I'm planning out, what's going to be in this edition? What's going to be there? And I realized that it was our anniversary. And the way I communicate with various readerships is by what their interest is or how they connect it. So a lot of people who may have gone to my high school or from Beverly Hills in Los Angeles, they've got one, and then follows the 90210. Anybody I know through 90210 is in that one. And I reached out to that group and asked people to express their feelings about the show in the 35th. And I'm using the zip code right now and I will put it in the introduction that I still have to write for the one that's coming out after Thanksgiving. Just how moving it was to read all of them. Yours, Pete, and Brian's too, quite frankly, that the people that are out there and more, and even the woman that the executive I'm dealing with CBS, when we finished the conversation on a matter that we're having relative to the music and other matters, she told me she was a fan of the show going up.
I just share this one image here, which Chuck might appreciate. I was imagining you reading these things, but with the Ken Burns treatment.
We'd have to, Ken Burns, one of the things
the documentary by Ken Burns.
Well, we'd have to have a lot of background music. It's like the one we did for baseball. We did an amazing documentary on baseball. And I think what was most amazing about it is that he played the song "Take Me Out to the Ball Game" 150 different ways from start to finish. I mean, it was his background music and that. But I do understand that he's hit gold with the American Revolution. I do.
I've only watched one episode, but I was not impressed. It was really kind of like going to school. It was not.
Was it the same thing? It was the same format, same tone.
Yeah, exactly. It felt like too familiar.
Well,
I watched it because I'm a glutton for history, but I don't think Dee will watch it after the second one. I'll watch one more with her.
The exciting thing is we have a lot of people in the wings here.
Bring them on. Yay!
Who want to say hi and who want to, they're going to read what they wrote in Chuck's Rosen Report. I mean, we're really selling the Rosen Report this week on the show. Get right, signed. Well, yeah.
You're going to find that the readers who are going to get it in November are going to find out that next month, December, is the last monthly. After that, I am pulling the plug and working on how to take the over 800 pages that I've written in this past year. How do I put it into book form?
I love it.
And a few other things too, as well. That I just
I'm bringing on some people, but I'm bringing Connie Ziegler because we haven't seen her in so long. Oh, how are you? Not to give you preferential treatment, but how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. It's so good to see you. How have you been? Sorry, good. This is like Zoom now. Yeah.
Busy, but good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so great to see you. I really loved, I was moved by what everybody wrote. I really was. But yours particularly, I just loved Connie. God, she was in Maine, and that's what it looked like. And there she was, and she's watching this TV show. And I just loved how you wrote it. So I asked Pete for sure, you know, just hoping you could make it, and it's good to see you.
It's so good to see you. It's been so long.
I know. Well, I saw Larry this year in person.
Oh, my God.
His vineyard. Mm-hmm. Really exciting. Really.
Oh, that's cool.
Have you gotten to do any of the fun meet and greets with the cast? Or are you not? Is that not your vibe?
I met Jenny and Tori.
Okay. But this is years before before everyone's been going to the Comic Cons and all that stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. I haven't been to a Comic Con, no.
Okay. All right, let's bring on everybody else. Just wanted to make sure that I gave extra special treatment. Connie Ziegler, just wanted to make sure she got
Kristen and
I see. Now the thing is, again, remember Davis is in the background waiting. We can only have a certain amount of people on at one time. So once someone's done, I'll bring you on and you can say the thing. Okay. Hello, Alexandra, too. This is the first time that we're communicating.
Yes, I'm so excited to be here, guys. This is so awesome. I'm so glad I could do this in person and see everyone.
And you're just killing it right now with the interviews that you're doing. Right, what do you write for again? Remind us.
Yeah, so I'm an entertainment correspondent at the New York Post.
Wow.
Yes. And you're
at the New York Post. Oh my.
Yes, but all entertainment, and I'm their West Coast division. So I'm out in LA. I'm back home east right now, but I live in LA and I do all the red carpets for them, interviews. So it's really fun.
One of my really good friends has just started with the New York Post based in Los Angeles.
Yes, because we're starting the California Post now.
Yes. Are you going to be involved with that?
Yes, I am.
Wow. Oh, well, you must.
Going to be a daily?
Jamie Page.
Okay, I'm going to have to look it up because it's really new. Are they doing entertainment?
No, she's City Hall. I was a news reporter before I did the fun stuff. But
so news, okay.
Nonetheless, she's there. It's the same thing. So that's great. Yep.
Oh, that's so exciting. Yeah, we're on the Fox lot. So I'm really excited.
Oh, well, that's really
all right. Oh, you're really excited. That's okay.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck. And then we have Kristen McIsaac, who must be so sad about what happened.
I'm still not over it.
No, you won't. Listen, I'm here to tell you, and Nikki knows this really well, you never get over it. You just don't. You just don't. I'm sorry to be the one, but
it's
you just
devastating.
Yeah. The way it even played out was even more devastating. If they had lost in a blowout, you can almost be okay with it. But
I know. We played so good. Oh, so sad.
Well, it's spectacular. You'll make all the historic films.
We're all really gassed. It was a hard series on the pitchers. There was just too many innings.
And then we have Nikki here with us, who's the total opposite. So excited that you lost.
So happy. I went to my first postseason game, NLCS Game 4.
Wow.
Which one was that? That was the Phillies?
No, the NLCS Milwaukee when we swept them.
Oh, nice. Beautiful. Very oh, that was the Otani show, right? You went to the Otani show.
My oh, boss my actually God. Took a couple of us as a surprise.
The thing is that it's a part 90210 podcast, but also baseball as well. That's it. it's slowly
it was
developing.
A stressful postseason.
Yes. Yeah. And we have Maggie, returning champion, who's been on the show so many times. How are you, Maggie? You're on mute, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true. It's confirmed. Mute. Okay. Richard Dawson would move along.
Yeah, but Steve Harvey is just going to stoke the whole thing. Until it's,
we have hey. Other. What have you been up? What have you been in?
Nothing. Just being mom, watching 90210 reruns, you know, the usual.
Have it, yeah, also, what is it? So you've seen the 4X stuff, right? You've seen the new 4K. Images?
Yeah, I checked it out to see.
Is it? I didn't mean to stop your thing here, but I am just really curious. Is it? Do you see it appreciably different than what was there before?
I do. I notice their eyes, their eye color.
I noticed like that too.
Really
what does
bright.
That mean? Is it for good or for bad?
Yeah,
for good. It's just like it's wow, so it's like, bright. It's like so okay. clear. It's crazy. I can't oh. believe what I'm watching. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it myself, so no like AI kind of restoration where you know it kind of looks uncanny. It actually looks okay.
I think it looks good. I think it looks like I'm watching it modern day. Like I took a moment. Really I was like,
it's like,
what's it?
Like a lot of sunshine on set.
Well, Chuck, that must be happy for Mr. Spelling because I know the eyes were so important to him. So now that they're saying that they can see the color
of the window to the soul.
Do you wonder why? I think you guys must all know this. You know that when an actor wore sunglasses, they basically would define the order of the building not to have sunglasses on. They you know you weren't supposed to do that, especially in the early years. He did not. The Mister did not like it.
I almost think he was casting people based on their eyes at some point.
Or you think that's what it was, Pete? I think there was other anatomy parts that had something to do with it too.
And then we have Catherine West, who's here wearing a 90210 Hi. Shirt. How are you?
This is a shirt that I made when I was in fifth grade.
Fifth grade?
I'm doing well. Vince Scully was my graduation speaker. So I had a special, oh, wow. I have a special Dodgers hat from my commencement. So I was wearing that during the series there. And I used to work at Endeavor. So I used to get to, sometimes they would give me the tickets that they had, which were really good.
Yeah, they were all Laker fans. They weren't.
Wait,
they
are you out here? Are you out here, Catherine West? Are you out here?
I'm not. I'm in Massachusetts, but I used to live in LA. I went to Pepperdine.
Okay, got it. That was the original home of California University, right, Chuck?
You know that, right, Catherine? That's where Mr. Spelling wanted to do it.
Well, I know. Yeah, I know that Stewart. They said I did a semester at Pepperdine. But yeah, I'm not surprised they let Zoe 101 film there. But I guess right. I guess
no,
they had
I just,
out.
You know, you guys kind of know my sensibilities, and I just wanted it to be a state be school. Yeah, and that place did not look like a state school. You know,
no,
I
didn't want it to be.
So I think you should let everybody read the things that they wrote in the Rosen Report about how they got into this, what 90210 meant to them, whatever it was, and if they want to, you know.
Yeah, you don't have to read the whole thing if you don't want to. Just a passage, whatever it would be. It was just a really, I, as we started out, you know, it really was moving to read everything you guys wrote and more. And by the way, in my deliberations with CBS, many of them have been sent to them. To finally say, why don't you? You don't even know who watches your TV show, what they think, and in the business decisions that you make that are constantly wrong. Anyway, that's
okay.
Oh, I shouldn't say that, Alexander. Just know, not on the record, and it's constantly could be better, not wrong. There's no right or wrong. There could be better and best.
Right. Could definitely be better.
That'd be nice. Also wearing. Maggie's also wearing a 90210 shirt. I wanted to just add that.
Yeah.
And that's from the merch store.
Yay. Yay. Which one is that? This year? Is that a new one or is that last 2420?
No, this is this year. It says back to back.
Good for you. Yay.
Back
I just ordered a new one.
Okay, let's. Why don't we start with Connie Ziegler? I'm giving you the preferential treatment of the day to read your thing.
Thank you.
By the way, your location looks incredible. The background, it looks so warm, and your house looks so warm and cozy right now.
It does look cozy, yeah.
We're on a lake. It's a little cabin. It is pretty cozy.
Yeah, it's the perfect place to be for the winter, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's nice.
Do you have a fire, like a fireplace?
No, we're missing that part.
Okay, all right, well, all right. Yeah. Next year.
Yeah.
Okay, what you got, Johnny?
Growing up in Down East, Maine, watching Beverly Hills 90210 felt like stepping into an entirely different world. I was 6 years old when I started watching in 1991, and I can't remember a time when that zip code wasn't part of who I am. I vividly recall watching episodes as they aired, The Slumber Party, Donna Martin Graduates. The night Kelly was trapped in the fire, I sat inches from the screen with the volume turned low. I was supposed to be in bed, and if my parents caught me, I would never know how it ended. I waited anxiously for each new issue of TV Guide, cutting out the half-page ads for upcoming episodes. I cried through the finale, feeling like I was saying goodbye to lifelong friends. Years later, while waitressing and living paycheck to paycheck, I saved enough to buy every season on DVD as it was released. When the series reran on SoapNet, I planned my afternoons around it. Even now, if I need a good cry, I put on Brandon's last episode. And the theme song has been my ringtone for longer than I can remember. Beverly Hills 90210 has meant more to me than I could ever fully explain. I've never been to California, but somehow it still feels like home.
That's a really nice one.
Wow, very nice.
Yes, beautiful.
Larry, how did you feel when you heard that?
Well, I mean, you know, it's very validating. I mean, you know, just that you could touch people, you know. Obviously, we were trying to entertain, and we loved the show, and we loved the characters, and we knew we had to be really sharp because there were fans out there who loved it even more than us, and we owed them it. So we worked hard.
Thank you.
Alexandra, you want to read yours?
Sure. Yes. I too watched it on SoapNet. That's how I discovered the show. I'll never forget. Saturday mornings, it was on SoapNet. And then next thing you know, my DVR is filled. And my mom would be like, you've seen this a million times. Can you delete the recording now? I'm like, do not touch the DVR. So yes, let me pull it up. So I said, I started watching Beverly Hills 90210 at 15 years old and have rewatched all 10 seasons every year since. Yes, I feel like I basically have a PhD in the zip codes drama. I really do rewatch it all 10 seasons. I'm on season 8 right now again. And then, you know, throughout the year, I forget and I start all over again. Growing up in a small town in Richfield, Connecticut, the show let me fantasize about life in California. And now that I live in LA, it's surreal to recognize the landmarks and scenery. I've connected with the characters through every stage of life, and I still discover new people, places, and moments with every single rewatch. As an entertainment correspondent, getting to interview Tori Spelling was such a highlight for me. She was on Dancing with the Stars last season, and I ran right up to her. It was my first interview of the season at Dancing, and she was incredible. Of course, sadly, she went home that night. It was the first one, but she was a gem to speak with. And yeah, now I said in this moment, I was about to start season 8 for the upteenth time as we speak. And now I'm like into season 8. So it's truly my forever favorite show. And I thank you guys, Larry and Chuck, because you created a masterpiece. And I don't know what my life would be without 90210. It's my favorite show. And I teared up reading everyone else's. I was like crying. It was just so beautiful hearing so many people also connected and feeling the same way about this show.
Mm-hmm.
The community that we built was something, that's something we didn't realize was going to happen when we started the thing 5 years ago. How we, by being there, giving people a place to go and talk about the show and you know, and then bringing all the stars and all the creators of the thing and all the people involved, we created a huge community, which is it's very supportive. I know we've made lots of, we've all personally made lots of friends, and people within the thing have made friends with other people. I know.
I do agree with what you said, Alexandra, too, about always being on the East Coast. What's the East Coast for you? Are you New York or?
Yeah, I'm in Connecticut. I'm right on the border of New York. I live in Richfield, so like right near Westchester.
Okay. But I feel like when I would watch 90210, I always dreamed of being there, right? Like that was California is 90210. And being 100%. Out here and going to the Apple Pan with Chuck or these sort of iconic places, it is a thing, isn't it?
Right, and seeing Larry and Chuck's name like on the show, never in my wildest dreams did I think of the names I would read, you know, every day for like 15 years, and I would one day be on a podcast talking to those people whose names I saw flash across the screen before spelling, and Dookie Vincent. I mean, it's amazing. And all the locations too, I watch so intently the opening scenes in 90210 where it flashes to all the spots, and I'll pause it and I'll be like, I know that, I've been there, drove by that house, Chin Chin is right there on Sunset. Like, I love it.
Oh, I totally agree with you.
Yeah. You know, Johnny, a lot of your second unit, Alexander, I just wanted to share this. I remember this day. It was one of my favorite days because it was hard launching this show, right? And every time we'd give them stories, they didn't want to do them. And it was just so – we were going to film shooting second unit, and I came out of documentary film. So that's what I wanted to do. That'll be cool. And we drove around and we shot all the places that you described. And I got, and I remember we were at the Bellage Hotel. That was our last place to be. And at the Bellage, they were having the screening, the formal screening of Evening Shade with Burt Reynolds. And everybody in that cast was there. And they were all dressed to the nines. It was as show business as you could get. And there I am with the t-shirt. And I've been sweating all day in the heat because it was summer. And the next day, I was told I had a nemesis in the spelling world in the beginning of the story. So he basically said that it was not what an executive producer should be doing with his time. Oh. And so the fact that you bring up those second unit that I thought, that's like, well, maybe it was. Maybe it exactly. was what I should have been doing there.
Anyway. Well, I mean, the Bellage Hotel is iconic, right? I mean, have you been by that?
Well, now it's a different hotel.
It's called right? London now, right? It's the London.
Oh, it's the same physical plant, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when they were doing that Luke Perry doc, Chuck, the director was like, I don't know where to do the interviews. Where should I? I was like, well, Dylan lived at the hotel. You should just do it at that hotel.
So and he, iconic.
Yeah. He called and got it right away. All right, Kristen McIsaac, you're up.
Okay, I hope I don't screw this up.
It's okay. It's yours. It's your word.
growing up in a small town in Saskatchewan, Beverly Hills 90210 felt like a world away. Glamorous, sun-soaked, and impossibly cool. I was completely drawn in by the dreamy hot guys, the gorgeous fashionable girls, the steamy storylines, and that carefree California lifestyle of surfers and shopping on Rodeo Drive. It was my escape, my inspiration, my happy place. Now that I'm older, the nostalgia hits even harder. I can see just how ahead of its time the show really was, tackling real issues beneath all the glitz and glam. 90210 will always be my favorite, and the friendships it has sparked brought lasting joy and unforgettable bonds. Thanks to the best podcast ever, it's been surreal to connect with Chuck Rosen and Larry Mullen, legends behind the scenes who now know I exist. I follow all the stars on social media, cheer on their projects, and still have to pinch myself that I've met them and shared real-life moments with them in person. Happy 35th anniversary to the show that shaped a generation. And thank you, Chuck, for all your hard work. You made my teenhood and now adulthood so meaningful, fun, and full of amazing memories. And as a proud Canadian, it was extra cool that the main star, Jason Priestley, was one of our own. Brandon, Brenda, and me, class of 93 forever.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I love that. Yeah, that was nice. Now, Nikki, you didn't write one of these.
I did, but I forgot to submit it. I think I was so consumed with Dodger baseball, but
I understand completely.
I was really consumed. Like, it was stressful, but yeah, I did write something before.
Okay, well, go ahead.
Oh, I'd love to hear it. Okay. Sure, thanks. Yeah.
Sorry that I didn't submit it. Like I said, I was
just That's great. You can submit it now. I'll put it in.
Okay.
The very last one I'm doing is December, and I will definitely give it a spot.
Errors and omissions.
Okay. As an 8-year-old,
exactly. I got one. I made so many mistakes, I had to put one up. I made errors. Okay, sue me.
All right. Go ahead.
All right. As an 8-year-old girl, when 90210 started, I was the outcast in school, teased, bullied, and wanted friends like them. I wished I just wanted to be one of them. 90210, I never thought would be a big impact on my life all these years later. And then I've told Pete this before. In 2020, during the darkest time of my life, when I had lost my dad, one day on Facebook, I saw an ad for this podcast. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to check it out. Not knowing how much it would change my life. The impact you guys have made. Just knowing that you guys know me and all the friends we've created and the community we've created. 90210 will always mean the world to me.
That's really nice. What about that when you hear that, guys, about the podcast itself, too? Isn't it a little bit surprising, Chuck? Because you didn't want to, you only wanted to do 10 of these episodes.
I remember the very first like post just saying one night only or whatever. And I had just like lost my dad 2 weeks prior to that. It was a dark time. And I was like, okay, I'm going to give this a, you know, check it out. And it was one of the best.
I'm blown away by that part of this.
I think, well, you know, certainly, well, you speak first, Larry.
I was just going to say, it gave us the chance to reunite with all our collaborators and all our colleagues. So it was great fun for us. We never really thought about, I mean, we thought there was an audience out there, it would be meaningful, but not the level of community that we built. But then for us, personally, it was just great to be able to see these faces and people you worked hard with, you were in the trenches with, and hear their stories and hear their well, and, you know, and see the delight in talking about the show and realizing, again, discovering the show really meant something to people. It was not a bad show.
And like Kristen said, like, just the fact that we know they know us and they know we exist means everything.
Yeah, yeah. Unreal.
Larry talks about, and he was saying to something, I just heard him say, you know, that, well, we tried to do this for the fans and the other fans. You know, with me, I got to be honest, I was just trying to survive years one and two. In three, I was trying to prove to Mr. Spelling and the rest of the industry that, no, you know, Darren Star is over there. I'm over here. So I had something. There was always something going on. And then I want to read what my friend Sandy Grushow, who was the president of Fox at the time, became the president of Fox, wrote about the show. Because, you know, the battle to get them not to be permanent high school students and move on with their lives was one that I found myself in when we had to repeat a year, you know, and they look kind of ridiculous by doing that. We didn't have to do that, but we did. And so, to make it, to have all of that and then pull together and realize that you made it for an audience, but it wasn't just theoretical. They're real people and they're my friends and they're here and they know me and I know them. And there's a wonderful song by Harry Nilsson about a guy who goes to the show and the fans remember his name and he remembers their name and this. And I remember hearing that the first time at 16 years old and thinking, well, someday I'll be 70 and maybe I'll think something like that. And there we go. So, you know,
I just removed Maggie for a beat so that we can have Davis finally join us here.
Hi, Davis.
Hey, Chuck.
How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm sad that this is going to be the last Rosen Report.
No, I'm doing one more monthly, and then I'll probably do one. What I'll announce the next one. I'm probably going to do one every quarter. I'll put one out every 3 months.
Just when they thought you were out, they pulled you back.
Just when they were going to kick me out of the building, I came up with a plan.
It's a ton of work, though, I'd imagine. My goodness.
That's much more than I imagined. Part of this, if you look at this, you know, it has a confession, and I haven't been doing confession. I did this confession, and the confession is that, you know, I, you know, never expected that this would be this. And I also talk about the origins of it, of the Rosen Report coming out of a scrapbook for my grandchildren, and that I couldn't really talk about because I didn't want to flaunt the stuff of that in the scrapbook was all my stuff,
right?
In a city where my friends, including my good friend Pete, lost his house and every all his stuff. I wasn't, here's my stuff, go look at my stuff. No, I couldn't do that. So, you know, we have that, and there is the scrap, all those little tchotchkes you see behind me in photographs and things like that.
Sure.
My, Miles. So anyway, I really appreciate all of you guys. Catherine, you too, how supportive you are. I really appreciate it.
Well, I brought Davis in because he wrote one too. So I'm gonna and I was gonna go to
absolutely, Catherine. Absolutely.
She's been waiting. Catherine is one of the stars on the show. She's
right. Go for Catherine.
Okay. Yes. All right. Okay. Here you are. Here I am. It's Kismet. Rick's words to Brenda echo through my mind when I think of 90210 and October 4th. It happened to be October 4th, 1995, when I turned on the episode Lover's Leap, saw 30 seconds of Valerie suffering the nightmare of her child molester father killing himself years before that story was retconned, and sprinted down the stairs, hot on pursuit of blank tape. As I ripped open the plastic, threw the cardboard sleeve to the ground, and hit record, I pressed the button that permanently bonded my life to that show. Back then, my online focus was my 90210 newsletter for dozens of curated AOL readers. My bedroom walls were covered with pictures of the cast ripped out from Team Bop. Wednesdays revolved around my show, and the tapes soon took over much of our living space, and I still have them. I took off for college in Malibu, driving from Georgia in a Civic, because just being in LA was once the clearest calling in my life. My first job was in television because there was no vocation that I could ever love like I loved TV. As the years ticked on, my social media presence became my kids and cats. My framed 90210 trade ads and autographs landed in a closet. My job, of all things, morphed into being a lawyer. The people I meet as an adult don't know that 90210 is stored within me, forever etched into my mind with dialogue and plot lines that I can still rattle off with near encyclopedic knowledge. But 90210 is no less important to me at 40 than it was at 10. It's forever the portal to my childhood home that I will always have with me. And thanks to Pete, Charles, and Larry, sometimes Wednesdays can still revolve around my show, and I can chat with fans in a way that reminds me of the AOL days. So cheers to October 4th, 1990. Even if the future does not always meet our expectations or the fates are cruel to us at times, no one can ever take this moment from me, from you, from any of us. No one can take away this moment in time.
Oh, that's very nice.
And I do just like to kind of add on to what you're saying. I mean, for years and years, when people have done 90210 stuff, I like avoid it because I'm like, I know more than you. I can't take it. It's annoying. But when I found Pete's show, I like immediately rattled off like probably like a 5-page email. I was like, this is the best thing I've ever heard. I'm obsessed with you. Like, please let me come on one day. I love everything you've done because it's so much better. It's like, I'm not necessarily a con person, but like if you all did a con, like I'd be like, yeah, I want to meet you. Right. You know, because this has been awesome. So thank you so much.
Well, that's kind of what you're welcome and thank you. It's like much likewise. That's kind of what Brian did to start, you know, a lot of this off by having the that event at Torrance High School.
With Brian Austin Green, you mean? Yeah,
Brian Austin Green. When we were the 2019
and the guided tour that was tied into that. That was Jen Lee Bernstein, and you know, by the way, we should also wish Dr. Sherry Weiss, the teen dramology,
when you did that interview with her, I remember I was working in Nashville at the time because I'd moved to country music. And I was reading it and I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. They talked to Larry. Like, it was like the first time that there was any behind the scenes stuff like that. I was like, I still have that saved. When I searched Charles Rosen in my email to pull this thing up came that interview that I had screenshotted.
There was a lot of anger in that interview, as I remember. Because, you know, that was like the dark ages before we knew it was good.
To me,
before we knew that anyone cared.
To me, when I heard Chuck on The Blaze, all those years ago, I was like, oh, I need to hear, this should be the podcast. The Blaze girls would just talk about what's going on in their lives, and then they would have Chuck's Corner. And I was like, that is the most interesting amount of information I've heard, and it's like put in a little box in the...
Well, I never, you know, except for the few times, maybe 4 or 5 times that I actually went to their studio and we talked, because it was, you know, that's how you would do it in the podcast in those days. I never listened to the show. I didn't listen to the show. I just, this is, read this for me. That's the most you're going to get from me at that, because I wasn't that interested in what the people who watched the show were thinking at that at that particular time. I because I felt, well, this is what I was thinking, and that's what you probably want to know. And I just wanted to make sure that you know stuff accurately, because my involvement with that show happened because someone else told me about it, and I actually turned it on as they were talking about the first episode I wrote, and they misinterpreted the entire episode. And these are two really bright women, and you know, love the show, but didn't at all understand my show was about the basketball and guys getting. No idea about race relations at all. So it was like, okay, I'm going to talk to you now, and we're going to do this. And that's how every week that I would correct the at least say, this is from me, so you, the fans or whoever's listening to what you're doing can know that this is what was on my mind.
But they just missed them. They just missed two things. They were a little bit ahead of the curve in terms of podcasting, and they missed the boat on the thought of like, oh, let's do a podcast with the writers of the show to understand what they were thinking when they were doing it.
They had no auspices. They've gone on to do other stuff in their lives.
They're amazing people. We've had them on here. I hope to have them on again. They invented the form of the thing that we're doing. I mean, there's no criticism, but that's where that stemmed. That's where this stemmed from. Was hearing them there, so they deserve all the credit.
Right.
The blade. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, Davis. Hit Me Davis is your name.
And well, it's Davis Hit is my name. Hit Me Davis is the email.
It's also,
well, that's the name that I use in when I refer to you, because that's I noticed.
Well, you
know, I never got your real name, so that
this is it.
So now I got it. I'll make those changes. No. Larry, that goes in errors and omissions. Right? Gotta have an errors and omissions. You know,
I'm famous. I'm in errors and omissions.
Okay, but when I'm going to ask you and put you on the spot, when I emailed you to the link, it comes back like a whole process to get an email to you. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, it's a box fee because I get so much email on Yahoo. It puts it in a box fee, so it's the extra additional emails on top of the main ones I get. So yeah. I hear that a lot.
Okay, well, that's feedback.
My apologies.
On your email account, that's some feedback and a note in case you want it for the future. Not that you have to use it or change it, but it is a note.
Thank you.
And that's what I'm here
for. All right. Mine's pretty short and sweet. You all are tough acts to follow. Mine is pretty simple, and it says that I always identified with the male leads on the show, even though I was 10 years younger than all the characters on the show. I was class of 2003, of course, West Bev class of 93. So to explain, I had a little bit of Brandon, Steve, David, and Dylan in me, all of them. The only difference is I was about 800 miles north on the Oregon coast. And of course, in the early 2000s, we had the internet. It was very prevalent. Wasn't in the early 90s on 90210. Had that been the case, and you had chat rooms at that time for that show, that would have opened up a world of more storylines. Who knows where it would have went. But that is mine, very short and sweet.
Mm. Well, I mean, inevitably, though, there was...
We did use the internet. Someone reminded me for the rave and the fire episode.
Season 5, yeah.
They posted in the... Because it wasn't an internet, by the way. It's an intranet.
Wait,
that's right. What was
Adelphi? Adelphi was the intern.
Steve posts to the Women Seeking Women chat room to invite them to the rave. That's why there's.
But lady. Before that, Claire was trolling people.
In the Rolling Stones episode, yes, where she flames people.
Season 5.
The first time we used it, because basically Fox also owned Delphi, which was an ISP.
That's right.
A dial-up. So we had some quick product placement. And
which is why we got into the Rolling Stones. We happened to be there that day that they got consummated, the Rolling Stones deal. I'm sitting across the room from the executive who just hung up the phone, and I just said to him, that's mine. You know, we're doing that show. Nobody.
It's so interesting, too. I'm only here because you did that episode. Like, I That's went cool. and watched that episode because I wanted
and, you
to.
Know, and just for you to realize the degradation involved, this was 1994. We've already done a year in college. This is the next year in college. I had to start the year telling the head of the business side what episodes we're planning that may cause them trouble. This was a Barry Diller thing, right? And yeah. It was very interesting to read. In the Rosen Report, in fact, Alexandra, you definitely should look up a previous edition, or I'll send it to you. I'll find it's the one where I review his book. And he was loath. It's a fascinating book. And Barry Diller's the brilliant man. But, man, he did not want to talk about his Fox years because he was really not the solution. And then he left. Okay, you know, but in Paramount, he was an ABC. Oh, my God. But, you know, but the Fox years were interesting. But
at the Christmas party, the people I was under contract with Fox, man, you lined up and basically you kissed his ring.
You walked down. Yeah.
You walked in.
You know, I'm just curious.
God bless him. He really understood a lot of things. He was good.
Diller, smart man.
We have Brian's, myself, and Sandy Grushaus. Do you want to read Sandy's?
I want to read Sandy's, but first I just want to know, because I've been curious about it before we go. Catherine, what kind of law do you practice?
Oh, good question.
Oh, I'm a wrongful termination lawyer. So if somebody was fired wrongfully, then I sue the company.
Oh, and nobody sues anybody in Massachusetts, though, do they?
I do, but I'm not just in Massachusetts.
Oh, you're
I'm throughout New England and New York. So I have a broad net. But yes, exactly. You know, there's always, yeah. So if anybody gets fired and you live in New England or New York, call me.
This would have worked great for that character in season 7, Larry. She could have repped Mark Reese when he got fired from
that. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Dalton James.
You know, and also Jamie Walters. She could have repped.
That was his name. Yeah, Jamie
Walters. Brian Navarro, do you want to read yours?
Sure, I wasn't planning to, but I can go ahead and do that. It's a bit of a long one, but I'll try to.
Long ones are okay.
Get through it.
You want me to do Sandy's first? Because it's.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Chuck wanted to do Sandy's.
Yeah, let me do. Sandy Grushaus is the president of Fox Broadcasting, and I went to Beverly Hills High School. He went to Beverly Hills High School. I graduated in 1970. I think he graduated 79 or 78, some other time. But anyway, this is what he writes to me. You know you always have my respect and gratitude. Guess I've been dragging my feet since I don't feel as though I have anything new to add to what we've discussed during my 2 to 3 podcast appearances. With that, I'm going to provide what were for me the seminal moments in early history of the series, the Rosen years, if you will. As you know, I did return to the network in 99, just in time to cancel the series, which had meant so much to me personally and the network in general. One. Who could forget the meeting Barry Diller called in his office in 1990 for Jamie Kellner, Peter Chernin, and I to discuss the possible cancellation of the severely underperforming series, Beverly Hills 90210. We had not yet earned the right to drop Beverly Hills. We quickly realized we had absolutely nothing left in the programming cupboard to replace it with. So there was no actual decision to make. We would all have no choice but to carry on with the destined to be canceled series. Visionaries, all of us. Who could forget the lunch you, Darren, Dan, and I shared in my office, plotting out the final 6 episodes of year 1 before we even conceived of carrying through the summer with original episodes. You're goddamn right Brenda and Dylan are going to do the dirty deed in the season's 22nd and final episode, or so we thought. Weeks later, my assistant tells me Mr. Kellner would like to see me in his office immediately. Gulp. 3. We decide it makes sense to continue to produce original episodes throughout the summer. Coming down the home stretch, we had momentum on our side, to put it mildly, and it made little sense to wait until September, October to relaunch with season 2. Murdoch thought I was nuts, said advertisers don't want to spend money in the summer. Another visionary. There was only one hitch. Someone had to call the exhausted and ornery executive producer, Chuck Rosen, to tell him he wasn't going anywhere anytime soon. That was fun. But Chuck came around, so much so that when the fearsome foursome, Chuck, Darren, Dan, and I met with Mr. Spelling in his library and I suggested the cast spend the summer on the beach with Brandon as a beach boy, Chuck and Darren agreed that it's a good idea. A miracle in its own right. Yeah, believe me, it was. And finally, Chuck calls me one day and asks me to have breakfast with him. At breakfast, Chuck announces that it's time for our kids, some closer to 30 than to 20, to graduate from high school and go to college. I knew he was right. I resented him for it. What if we fucked the whole thing up? What are we then going to do to attend school locally? Shit. I got to go speak to Chernin. Before I can ask him to meet with me, he asked me to come down the hall to his office. He asked me to sit down and proceeds to inform me that the night before, Murdoch fired Joe Roth and asked Peter to replace him as the head of the feature film division. I immediately inquire as to who will replace him. Chernin looks at me and says, I think you should. Shit. Now I have to make the graduation decision all by myself. The end. I love you, Sandy.
That's great.
Great. So that meant a lot to me, too.
I have a question for Larry and Chuck. I'm curious to know, was there a moment that you pinpointed where you were like, okay, the show has made it? Like, do you remember? Because you've spoken about the Dark Ages. And was there a moment where you're like, this is actually something? We have it.
You mean during the production, or are you talking about after the thing ended? The years
during the production.
Well, Chuck would feel that. I when I stepped into the show, I already know it was really a runaway train. There was great stuff happening, and I was part of that transition to college because I wrote the first college episode and the last, actually.
Well, you know, my whole experience in doing 90210 was that it was just show life. It was, you know, it was 50 weeks a year, 6.5 days a week, and that hours, it just all ran together. Really, there wasn't very much unless it was, you know, we really made an effort. You know, there wasn't much casual use of my time, I'll put it that way. Even though I had a daughter, I was active in her world and coached her basketball team at the Y in season 5. So, you know, I made time for life, but I really didn't have much of one at all. And I remember the man that Sandy was number one, but the head of the current department was a fellow named Dan McDermott, who went on to be the president of AMC. I think he still does things, and he was a terrific guy. We worked very closely. He was also about a decade younger than me. And he called me up, and I know this is going to sound kind of crass, but it just was it. He said, you do aware, Mr. Rosen, you're going to be a rich man. And that was the first one. You mean we're not getting canceled? And then 2 months later, Aaron doesn't pick up my contract. So, you know, it doesn't matter. This is what I'm going to tell you, Alexander. It doesn't matter what they say. What do they do?
Right.
So you have to sustain a hit. You know, once you have a hit, then you have
the responsibility. Yeah, then the pressure's on. Yeah.
Right, then the pressure's on.
Then the pressure really starts.
Well, so. I think you guys know. I think I've talked to you about it. But, you know, in terms of the writing of stuff, I mean, I was really blessed because I would go to sleep. We'd have some significant script problems. And I'd go to sleep, and I had this ability then just to wake up and still do a little bit with the Rosen Report. I just wake up and, well, we would do it this way. This will work itself out. And so I was really lucky for that because it minimized. I learned really quickly there was no reason to really, you know, worry about everything. Mr. Spelling was a real worrier, where Duke Vinson was a real doer, his partner Duke. Duke was a better way to go. What can we do to fix them? What can we do this instead of worrying about it? I remember watching, this is a true story, watching Dailies maybe the second time with Aaron Spelling. And Bethany Rooney was the director. And he didn't know Bethany Rooney. And he was really worried that I hired this young woman with credits of saying elsewhere, excuse me, but, you know, that I knew and was a talented young woman. And look, she's 30-year career. She's great. You all seen her on the podcast and things like that. And we're watching it, and they used to bring it back, and they would give it to you in reels, and you'd watch them, and they were in order. But what you'd also always get are camera reports. So you could see what they shot. And he's petrified that she didn't do a close-up. And I'm going, but Mr., it's right here. Here's the show. The show, they did it. It's right here. You can look. You can read the camera report and know that they did it. Larry, that took 20 minutes to get him through that nervous little head of his. That was, you could just look at this and then, oh, and now I'm seeing it on the screen.
But he was probably still nervous that it wasn't going to be there for some reason.
Yes, the lab. He's seen it all, of course. He was.
Yeah.
You know, he used to watch dailies on a big screen. He's used to watching dailies on a big screen. Before the
Abbey. That's true. That is true. We used to go to a theater and watch.
Yeah. But Larry, I want to go back to what Alexandra asked you, because you made an interesting point that you have to sustain the show. And so there is a moment where you might have to think to yourself, we're okay. We're going to be okay after people left the writing room and all this stuff. Chuck, basically.
Yeah, well, I mean, doing the 32 episodes, you really didn't have time to kind of really be afraid. You just had to get the work done. Yeah, because you had to break a lot of story, and all the stories, you know, again, it was like manufacturing, because the big stories, the big story arcs had to climax during the sweeps period. Those were the money ball periods. So it was, and logistically, once we get into the double ups, it was even more like, you know, this is like, I guess there was no algorithm for this at that point. We were basically making an algorithm.
Yeah, you had to have the ability to be able to conceptualize storytelling in theoretically in the future.
How many episodes is this story going to take? Chuck would always ask that question. We can do this story in like 4 episodes. So that's 4 episodes for that story. You know, you're building modules.
I love that.
As far as Alexandra's question, I think, you know, there's great moments of satisfaction when people that you know and really care about and respect, you know, like the head of NBC Network at one point said to me, that was a great episode last night. I mean, that to me was really special. That was Warren Littlefield.
You remember what episode?
But then again, we got to fill out tomorrow. You got to do more stuff. So, and you got to keep the quality up. And that's the important thing.
Do you remember what episode that was? That he said that about? What episode?
Yeah, that was the death of Tony Marchette. Yeah, you know, Dylan, it did a big number because he was impressed. And I was actually, our kids knew each other. We were playing flag football. He took me aside and said, you're doing a great job with that show. Always like Warren. He of course, was our executive.
Love Warren.
Jeff and I went down water show. We were in Hawaii, and Warren got fired at NBC. And the next thing you know is our show.
And we got fired the next day, yes.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, Warren did all right. He wound up being part of executive Fargo all those seasons, too.
And MGM, he does great stuff over with those guys. But he's the guy, you know, it was a time when they picked up Wind on Water. business was still doing well, but it was, you knew something was in the air. Things were changing. The network world seemed to be eroding a little bit. It's becoming very conservative in the money. And with Warren, it's like, well, we're going to an after party. Come on. And that's, you know, Warren liked to have fun. And that was the one thing that was at the end of the 90s, in the late 90s. The 80s and the 70s were a lot of fun.
We were the last Saturday night primetime show because people decided after we got canceled, don't watch TV on Saturday.
No one will watch TV on a Saturday night.
They would do repeats or game shows or the WWE.
Right. Football.
This is why I need the Rosen Report. All of this Hollywood tea. Like, I live for the Rosen Report section. I'm learning all of these things about the 90s, all this tea from Hollywood. I live for it. I need it. It's so good. I've learned so much, Chuck, from this Rosen Report. Like, I love all of this behind
me. That's
great.
Well, we'll keep in touch. I promise you.
It is coming to an end.
I know.
She hasn't convinced you to keep it going, Chuck.
Oh, I'll do it. Well, I got to write about Hawaii. The truth is, the damn thing is so, it's become a damn thing, yes. It is so time consuming that I really can't get anything else done. So I'm not going to have time to write about my 3 shows that I produced in Hawaii and how I got very sour on the islands and didn't want to go back for like 10 years. Here are the 3 shows, and I'm going to tease it, but I'm not going to write about it till the 2026. Mm-hmm. We'll get to write about Zalman King, Larry. We'll get to do the whole thing.
You're saying about the 90s and stuff. Like, so I spent my entire life obsessed with TV. I taped it all. I was obsessed with 90210. I was like, I'm going to work in TV. This is all I care about. This is my whole life. I graduated college in 2008. I started working at Endeavor.
I worked for Rick Rosen. It was amazing. I'm like, I don't think TV exists anymore. Like, I'm like, it's I think that my thing,
no,
like,
no, Rick Rosen. After I left 90210, you know, Rick was an old friend of mine. I knew Rick because he was an executive originally at Columbia. We had kids together. We, you know, we played hockey. I mean, it was a close.
Yeah, friend. He loves hockey.
And I remember going to his office because I wanted him to represent me. I felt my agent kind of let me down in the termination. And Rick said, you know, it's not like you came from a good show. There's nothing I can really do for you.
God. See, well, and I mean, I wasn't there to call out from the office. But yeah, I, you know, Rick's an amazing guy. Like, it really, honestly, it was a dream come true because I was like,
he's a quality guy.
Yeah, he was a mensch for sure.
I think his wife died young. She died young. I always wonder what
happened. He did, yeah.
Hope was wonderful. We knew Hope well.
Hope family was Cleveland mob.
Okay. Yeah. Hope had just died, and his daughter Sally's my age. I mean, they're an amazing family. So it was a dream come true. But I fled because I was like, I don't think TV is really what it was when I was a child.
No, it's 32 episodes a season. It's not the same.
I'd like to get Brian to read his and my and read mine. If it's possible.
I would like ask a question.
Can I just say something? Oh, you have a question? Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I can do it after. I just want to make sure I can ask. It's fine.
Sure.
Yes. Remember, Pete, I really have a hard out at 6. Okay. I really got to go. So
let's do Larry.
All right. All right. When I first began watching Beverly Hills 90210 at around 15 years of age, I never would have guessed that it would end up becoming such a big part of my life. Having been born during the show's final season, I didn't get a chance to watch the series as it aired, but I got to experience the series with the DVD releases, as flawed as they are. 90210 provided an escape for me, from the sometimes monotonous and bleak experience that was my own high school life. As the show became more serialized, I was completely hooked and began frequenting online message boards to discuss the series with other fans. But unfortunately, a massive void was left when the IMDb message board shut down in 2017, which led me to Reddit, another internet forum site. A page for 90210 had already been made, which I joined, and it was still at double digits when in terms of members when I joined. But I started hosting weekly episode rewatches and discussions that got really popular, and soon they made me a moderator for the site. And currently we are at 20,000 members, close to 30,000, so it's still popular. it's on this page that I made many close friendships, namely the two Caitlins. You guys know Caitlin Ryan. Caitlin Connor have been on the podcast a number of times. It's with them that I attended Ryan Thomas Brown's wedding, who everybody knows as Nelson Muntz. And it was at this wedding that I not only got to meet Ryan, but I got to meet Chuck, Larry, and fellow superfan Pete. We all got along famously, and soon enough, I was invited to become a new co-host on the podcast. And frankly, it's still a bit jarring to say that I co-host a podcast with two of the writers and producers of one of my all-time favorite shows, but I'm so grateful for it. The biggest gift 90210 and this podcast has given me is the friendships that I've made not only with Chuck, Larry, and Pete, but with so many fans from all around the world. Being part of the 90210 community has brought so many amazing people in my life, and I'm so grateful for it.
Amazing. Chuck, can I read mine or do you want to go?
I love yours, but I would go, but I just want to tell Brian that that relative to the Rosen report, that I always look forward to whatever, especially when we go into decades. And I knew that your picks would be so much different than all my, you know, my old friends. So I really and we're a little, you know, out there for a pop mainstream guy like me. So that was really great, you know. But Pete, if you don't mind, I know it real well, and I have a stinky. We're supposed to be dinner with the closest friends on a very important birthday at 6:15, and Maya have a sinking feeling that she's upstairs asleep, and it's 6:03. So welcome to my world, and love you all, and thank you so much for coming.
All right, I'm gonna read mine, and then we'll wrap out. Kristen, was your question for Chuck?
Yeah, it was for Chuck.
Oh, okay.
It was just about fan mail. Like, did the cast care? Did they
get? We were not allowed to see. Spelling took that away from us and hired a service, and I never got to read when anybody thought about the show. I did in the first weeks because people would address me. It's my name on it. And I have some great stories about that, and maybe we'll talk about that sometime.
I want to hear about that.
There was one really great story, but not tonight, unfortunately.
You have the 6:15, Chuck. 6:15. Okay.
All right, then.
And then we'll get out of here. My wife deserves all the credit. She used to nudge me to watch Beverly Hills 90210 all the time. She's a Brenda and Dylan forever. I get it now. 90210 was a show I loved watching on repeats. I wasn't a remember the line kind of person, but I always felt something deeper from it. After binging it for like the 300th time, I thought, I wonder who the writers of this show were. Larry Mullen's episodes always seem to have some wild shit going on, and that Charles Rosen, he must be a bigger Rolling Stones nut than me. But the reason I kept watching was for Claire Arnold. I couldn't resist that intelligent, pale skin, leather jacket, wearing sexy yet weirdly funny brat, the daughter of the chancellor. One day I woke up and I thought, I'd like to talk to Charles Rosen on a podcast I didn't even have. I created the podcast just so I could talk to him about Beverly Hills 90210. I didn't have a single listener. Of course he said no. He had already done podcasts. Then I went and listened to those, and Charles was always the most interesting and funny. I found a small clip where he talked about the Rolling Stones episode being one of his favorites. This was the first episode of 90210 I ever watched because of my love of the Stones. And then there was Claire calling them old. So I wrote him back and said, okay, let's talk about the Stones episode. Stones fans always have always need an excuse to talk about the Stones. He said yes. Then the pandemic struck. I was home live streaming, podcasting, I don't even know what to call it, every day. I moved to LA and I asked Charles if he'd like to do it again and maybe let fans ask questions. He said only if he could bring on Larry Mullen too. It was a mess with so many Wi-Fi and pandemic issues, but in the end, I felt a calling and a spark to do something. And so the Beverly Hills 90210 show was born. We did this every week, sometimes twice a week. We talked about episodes and characters. And then the other writers came on, Karen, Jessica, and Chip. We dissected Professor Finley's cult and really built a fun place for people to go every Wednesday night. Given the state of the world, I know it was my favorite day of the week. Then all of the actors started coming on. Then we did a super show reuniting the cast. Then Larry suggested, why don't we bring on Kathleen Robertson, Claire Arnold? She made it impossible at first. Knowing her now, I have no idea how she ever even agreed to do it. It's not her thing, but she did. An entire community of fans became friends with each other, and it became something so much more than a place to talk about 90210. Charles and Larry have become two of my dearest friends. Both have become mentors. They really have shown me the ropes in all of this life stuff. Dodger games with Chuck, concerts with Larry. It's really been a dream. I've had a deep conversation with Jenny Garth under a tree. I ate a pizza with Tori Spelling. I grabbed beers with Brian Austin Green. And incredibly, Claire, Kathleen, has truly become vitally important to me. The community of other fans and friends got behind me during one of the most challenging times of my life during the Eaton fires and helped me to get back on my feet. And all of this kind of started because one morning I woke up and thought, Larry Mullen's cocaine episodes are wild, and Charles Rosen's Dreams of Dylan McKay is on another level of thought, and I need to ask him about it. That is mine.
Wow, okay.
Outstanding.
Outstanding. I mean, those the two big shows, we did a couple of big shows, but Planet 90210 was epic, really. You know, what we approached with that thing, where we found people, and Kristen was part of that. She was here representing Toronto, Canada. Then we did America's Zip Code. We kind of topped ourselves again. I mean, in a way, this is a lot of hearing these things are things we heard on those episodes, what the show really meant to them, which is great. And it's so satisfying for us to hear. I mean,
We're probably due for one more of those big events, aren't we?
It's been great getting, you know, acclaim for the show, you know, 35 years later. it's good. But even though then, I mean, you know, we knew the show was popular because people wanted to know what was going on. I mean, in our little inner world of my relatives, can you give me the script? Just let me see. You know, people wanted, you know, can we go down to the set on the off day? It's the weekend. Can you get us into the set? We go walk on the set. Yeah, we knew the show was popular because there were only four networks then. I mean, when I started in TV, there were only three networks. And, you know, that's all you could watch. And that's why Chips used to get 40 million people watch it, which is, you know, that's really, I love going in that show.
Even those episodes when Pete would bring on fans, like, I mean, I got to be on with David Lasher, and Connie was with Jason, and Michael Cutlets was on my episode.
I got you, Connie.
I think everyone was very happy celebrating the show because, again, it was delayed response. I mean, we never got that. So I think everyone really, the cast, I'm talking about the cast and the key creative members.
Interesting.
A piece of it because they were there and they should. And they just, that's why it's so disappointing to us that we don't get to talk to Tiffany or Colin.
One day we'll get Tiffany.
Jason Wiles.
I don't know about that, Catherine West.
What did she say?
She said, one day we'll get Tiffany.
I want to be on with Tiffany.
You know, we haven't really turned up the heat on Tiffany.
I'm sorry, but I think that's Renee gets the heat.
Me and Renee can do it.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to give it to Renee, but you can think.
We're both our buddies, you know?
Get her flowers. I mean, it's a great character. I mean, you know that people really either, you know, like a heel. You hate them, but you love them. I mean, she's a really important character.
It's very true.
Best. She brought me to the show. She's amazing.
Okay. This has been great, guys. Good to see everybody. Connie Ziegler, anytime you want to come on the podcast, you're welcome.
Connie.
Thank you.
So come to the vineyard again. Come to the vineyard.
I will.
Yeah, she had your friend there who owns some good restaurants. Yeah.
Alexandra, good to see you.
Definitely. She's a first favorite.
You're going to have to be on way more, so I'm excited. And all the other ones here, Kristen and Catherine, of course, Catherine.
We keep with everybody. So, yeah, but
everything about 90210.
She does.
Yeah. All right, guys. This has been fun. We will see everybody again soon. If we don't see you, have a great Thanksgiving.
Yeah, definitely have a good Thanksgiving. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Bye.